It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
The Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Broken bat looper, Adams calling for it, and the Rays have won the series against the Dodgers.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
Swung on and mashed. Deep to left field, and it's in there for extra bases. Up against the wall it goes. Walls is home, and the Rays lead 5-4 in the seventh. A pinch hit. RBI double for Yandy Diaz.
This Week in Rays Baseball starts right now.
And welcome to our latest program, everybody. My name is Chris Adams-Wall. We are happy to have you with us. In this week's show, we'll talk with Rays outfielder Richie Palacios, who is having the week of his life. A game-tying hit on Tuesday night against the Angels, then a home run in his first career game at Yankee Stadium, followed by a trip to Madison Square Garden, where the Brooklyn native took in Game 1 of the NBA playoffs between the Philadelphia 76ers and his New York Knicks, who did win the game. We'll talk to Richie about his first few weeks with Tampa Bay, growing up playing baseball in New York City, and his unmistakable specs. Then we'll get together with Rays assistant pitching coach, rehab coach, and special assistant Rick Knapp to check in on how Tampa Bay's bevy of starters are faring so far in the rehabilitation process. After that, Rays broadcaster Doug Wechter will stop by to give us his two cents on the Rays' first couple of weeks of the 2024 season. And then we'll wrap it all up in a fun conversation with Rays director of promotions, Stephon Thomas. But we begin with Richie Palacios, who was asked if he could have anticipated hitting third as much as he has so far for the Rays after coming over in a trade with the St. Louis Cardinals this offseason.
For me, I'm just trying to be on the field. But it's obviously cool to be in the top of the lineup because those are guys supposed to table set and set the tone. But for me, you know, wherever it is in the lineup, I'm treating it the same way. But it's pretty cool sometimes to get in the top of the lineup.
How has it been for you so far, though, through the first couple of weeks with the Tampa Bay Rays? Because this is your first season with the club.
Yeah, it's been awesome. I mean, we're having a great time. We're winning series, which is always important. It's a lot more fun when we're winning. But we have a good group of guys that just know enjoy the game and work hard while we're doing it.
You were with the St. Louis Cardinals before coming over to the Tampa Bay Rays, and we'll get to that. But you were traded just a couple of months ago, in January, in fact. What was that day like for you? Is that kind of crazy?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, whenever you get traded, you don't expect it. You know, just in the offseason, I was training. I was actually driving to a workout while I was in Arizona and got the call pretty much that I was traded. So it's obviously surprising, but then, you know, obviously hearing you going to the Rays, I just always heard about the excitement and the analytics and everything that they do successfully here. So I couldn't be more happy to be on a team like that.
Had you spent much time in the Tampa Bay area prior to this season?
I spent a couple months in the off season, the end of 2020. My brother was actually training around here in like the Pinellas Park area. So I came and spent an off season with him. So I kind of knew the area a little bit, just, you know, St. Peter, Tampa area. But now I'm definitely here for more time than a couple months.
And we'll talk to about your brother also, because he's also a big leaguer, although right now he's in AAA with the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. Let's go all the way back to your childhood, though. You are from New York City. You grew up in Brooklyn. What was that like? I mean, that's not exactly a baseball hotbed. It's kind of tough to play when you're in the biggest city in the United States, right?
Yeah, there's a love growing up in New York City, but from a baseball aspect, it was very tough. Well, one, you didn't have a lot of fields, and to be honest, right, we just played in public parks, didn't have a lot of facilities. You know, there was one facility we were able to train at that had, you know, good enough equipment for us to work out at. And then the fields we're playing on are horrible, and it's definitely a tough thing, but it wasn't impossible. Granted, we had parents that were able to sacrifice a lot for us in order to put us in positions, but I grew up with a lot of kids that didn't have that same opportunity. So for us, we were blessed to have parents that were able to provide for us and, you know, go above and beyond in that area. But it's crazy because there's, I think, less than five, I think, guys that grew up in New York City that are in the big leagues right now. We got a couple guys that grew up outside, and we claim those guys, you know, the Baiters, the O'Hoppies. Mm-hmm. We claim those guys, but, like, guys that grew up in the actual city, there's definitely less than five guys. So it's right. crazy to be in such a big city, but it's just, you know, it's tough. It's very tough coming out of there, and there aren't a lot of things that are there for the guys to be able to be successful within that.
And was baseball always your first true love, or did you play other sports growing up?
Our family played baseball, so baseball was always my true love. I hooped and played basketball all the way until my last year of high school. That's a great sport, huge sport in New York City. So I still call myself a hooper. Yeah. I don't play anymore, but I knew I wasn't going to take that seriously. So I knew baseball was the number one thing, but definitely play some other sports.
And I've read that you went to Berkeley Carroll School, which is in Park Slope, Brooklyn. That's the same high school that Adam Ottavino went to. Do you know Adam at all?
I met him. I think I met him once. But yeah, he's definitely alma mater from Berkeley Carroll. I think he might be the only other one that's made it to the big leagues. Well, he made it first. I'm the only other one to make it. But no, I haven't got to spend much time with him. But I look forward to when I do.
But you spent plenty of time with your brother, obviously. That must have been nice, though. I know he's about 2 years older than you. You guys are both big leaguers. What kind of a resource was he for you, though? Were you guys just kind of challenging each other? Like, we can do this. We can get to the big leagues, even if we're here in Brooklyn trying to make it.
Yeah, for me, I mean, he was kind of like the guy I looked up to and still look up to my entire life. I mean, granted, my uncle played, my dad played, but they played in a lot, you know, different time. So having my brother being able to, you know, accomplish the thing he's been able to do, like, a couple years ahead of me, he's always given me, you know, so much resources, so much help. I call it a Chico because he pretty much told me what I had to look forward to. Like, when he was in college, he was like, this is what you're going to need to be successful in. When he got to the minor leagues, he's like, this is what you're going to need to do to be successful. So within that, I definitely had a head start in everything I've done, and I appreciate him for that.
And let's flash forward to college now. You end up going to Towson University to go play for the Tigers in Maryland. That's where Andy Freed went, voice of the Rays.
Shout out to Andy.
How did you end up going to Towson, though?
Honestly, I mean, growing up in New York City, not a lot of college coaches came out to watch you play, and the few schools that did, you know, didn't think I was – a lot of times they told me I wasn't big enough. That was a big thing when I was in high school. Told me I wasn't big enough, tall enough for whatever conference they were in or whatever school they're in. So, like, for me, it was just another part of my story, just defying the odds of, you know, people telling me that I wasn't good enough to play at their school or I wasn't big enough to play at their school. So that's how I ended up at Towson. They were able to come out and watch me play, offer me, like, a scholarship, and I just, you know, jumped at it knowing I'd be able to play Division I baseball and to get the opportunity to play right away. So once that was on the table, I took it and ran.
And is that kind of when you started to take off, would you say?
I mean, I was always really good, but when I got to college, I started weightlifting like twice a day, like crazy. Wanted to pass the eye test for everybody, being that people told me I was too small. And for me, it was just, that was my time to be able to play against, you know, Division I players and to show these scouts and whoever that I was good enough to play at the professional level. So for me, that was the first chance I got to really play on a big stage and do really well and be able to be recognized for that.
And then in 2018, you're drafted in the third round by Cleveland. I mean, what was that day like? Were you expecting to go that high?
I mean, so, you know, I was hearing everyone saying possibly first five rounds, but, you know, knowing how the draft is and actually going through with my brother, it's so, like, crazy where they can tell you one thing and expect you to go one place and you don't go there at all. So for me, I wasn't trying to, you know, focus on that. I was just trying to enjoy the day and figure out what was going to happen. So when we got the call for that, I was definitely excited, excited for it. But I didn't know for sure I was going at any point.
So you go to the third round or in the third round to Cleveland. And then 4 years later, you make your major league debut. I read you singled off Michael Lorenzen in that game. What was that day like for you? That must have been pretty surreal, I would imagine.
Yeah. The debut day is awesome. It's actually, we went to the Angels stadium last week, and they put up all the balls for guys that got their first hits and first debuts in the Angels stadium. So it was pretty cool to see my ball up there 2 years later, two years later. Yeah, but it's obviously exciting to be able to accomplish, you know, to get to the major leagues. And then, obviously, you know, the goal is to be a player for a long time.
And you were traded to St. Louis last June, and you and I have talked about this but I go back to September 13th. The Rays played a day game against the Minnesota Twins. I think Randy Rosarena hit a walk-off home run, or not a walk-off, a game-winning home run in Minnesota. Then later that night, I remember, oh yeah, the Orioles are playing. The Rays are going to Baltimore after this, the team that they are chasing in the AL East standings. And they're playing this Cardinals team, and this guy with these specs gets to the plate, and he just destroys this ball over the right field fence. Cardinals win 1-0. All of a sudden, the Rays are closer in the standings. That guy was you, though. So you were already helping the team that you were going to a few months later. You remember that day, though, yeah?
Yeah, I do. Actually, Eric Neander reminded me of that when he called me. He was like, yeah, you try to help us out a little bit last year. But, yeah, it definitely was exciting to be able to do that. Knowing I was helping the boys before I even knew it.
What was it like spending time with the Cleveland organization and the St. Louis organization, though, and then coming to Tampa Bay? I mean, do you notice a big difference between all three of those organizations?
Yeah, obviously, I feel like every organization has, you know, different aspects of it. Cleveland was awesome. St. Louis was awesome as well. But here is awesome as well, too. I mean, we have a lot of fun here. We work extremely hard, but we definitely enjoy the game while we're playing it. And we have just a ton of energy behind everything we do, whether it's in practice, whether it's in the game. So for me, I feel like I'm at home here. I've always played with energy and played loose and played having a good time. And I feel like that goes in line with a lot of the guys that are here on this team.
I got to ask you about the specs now, since I already touched on it earlier. But have you always worn these things? I mean, they're pretty stylish, I think. And I feel like every time I see you, they're a different tint.
Yeah.
You have a different pair. Like, how many different pairs of these things do you have?
Shout out to Oakley. I have a good amount. I have a ton of specs, but I didn't wear them all the time. I started wearing them in 2021, halfway through the season in AA. So I had a prescription, and they said it could slightly work. But, you know, I just wanted to keep what was working. I was hitting, like, 280 in AA, I think 290 without the glasses at all. And they were like, well, these will help you at night if you use them. But I was just always like, no, I hit perfectly without them. So then I was like, you know, one day I was like, you know, I'm going to just wear the glasses. Like, I'm going to wear them 100%. Like, I'm going to trust in them that they're saying that they're going to help. And I wore them, I remember, in Harrisburg. And then I went 5 for 5 that game. And I literally saw the ball like a watermelon. Got 5 hits. And then I was like, from that day on, I will wear my glasses. And I like them. I like the style of them. It's part of my swag now. It's part of my drip. So I still rock them, but that's the story behind them.
Well, going 5 for 5 helps, and on the island there in Harrisburg, too. I'm curious, though, like, do you wear them off the field, too? And did you start wearing them because of a vision issue, or was it just to assist your vision?
Yeah, it was just to assist. I mean, I have 20/20 vision, but at night, it would assist me. That's what we got from the eye doctor. So I was locked in on that. I stuck with it. But no, I don't wear them off the field. It's just when I'm playing the game. Off the field, I wear glasses, but they don't have a prescription.
Gotcha.
More for the swag.
But you certainly have that. Let's talk about your parents. Your dad is of Puerto Rican descent. Your mom is from Curacao. And because of that, you were able to play for the Netherlands at the World Baseball Classic in 2023 with your brother Joshua. What was that experience like?
So growing up, you know, we always watched the World Baseball Classic because, one, we just love the game of baseball, and two, we were able to watch, like, the crazy series between, like, Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico and the Netherlands, and we used to watch how crazy those games were and how much fun those guys were having. So obviously, you know, growing up being baseball players, we wanted to be a part of that and whatever facet that was going to be. So when we had the opportunity to go and play for the Netherlands, like, we were like, we're in. Like, this is what we've grown up watching. We want to be a part of this. We wanted to get to Miami, obviously, and play in the semifinals. That didn't happen, but it was truly an experience that I'll never forget, and hopefully we'll be able to do that for many more years.
And then let's go back to the Big Apple. You and I have talked a little bit about this, but you're a basketball guy. You said that you were a hooper back in the day.
I'm not a basketball guy. I'm a hooper.
You're a hooper. There we go. Just to clarify, you and I have talked about this, though, because I grew up a Knicks fan. You grew up a Knicks fan, but you're also from Brooklyn, where the Nets moved from New Jersey.
Yeah.
You kind of told me you're a fan of both. I'm here to tell you, though, Richard Palacios, I think that's illegal.
Low key is illegal, but it was like the Nets are like 5 minutes from the crib, so it's like, why not root for them? But yeah, like my grandfather and my late grandfather, he was like the biggest Knicks fan ever. So growing up, he had us watching MSG all the time. We remember the Allen Houstons, the Latrell Sprewells, all those guys we grew up watching with grandpa. So yeah, I would definitely say I've been rooting for the Knicks, and I'm going to continue to root for the Knicks. But I root for the Nets too because they're right by the crib.
So. Well, they also need some fans because I think the vast majority of New Yorkers are Knicks fans. The Knicks are in the playoffs, as you know. They're the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference. Do you think they can make the finals this year?
So for me, I've watched a lot of basketball. And the Knicks now, they look like a complete team. Obviously, you can't, know who's going to the finals. But for me, it's like anyone in the playoffs can go on a good run. And I hope the Knicks do that. You know, they have the Brunson. They got the couple big men there. They got, Precious. They got Anunoby. Like, I think they got a most complete team that I've seen in the past couple years when they've been in the playoffs. So I think this is going to be their best run, but obviously you never know. You still got to play the game. So
yeah, that's right.
Hopefully they do, because I know New York will be lit.
Right.
So
let's not forget about Dante DiVincenzo either. Last question for you, though, Richie. Who did you grow up rooting for in baseball? Were you more of a Yankees fan or a Mets fan or another team? And then within that question, who was your favorite baseball player growing up?
So growing up, our family were Yankee fans, so we rooted for the Yankees. And when we were growing up, they were really good, so it was a good team to root for on top of that. My dad would take us out of school early sometimes, half days, and we'd go to the Yankees games. And that pretty much grew like our passion for the game, just sitting there watching the guys play and win was what grew the passion for baseball within us. And then obviously when I went pro, I stopped rooting for the Yankees immediately because I knew there was a possibility we'd be playing against them. But what was the other question you asked me?
Who's your favorite player?
Oh, my player. So growing up, a little bit of Paul O'Neill when I was really, really young. I just loved his little kick he did. That was
a left-hand hitter.
Yeah, left-hand hitter. And then I loved Alfonso Soriano. He was a monster. I really liked him. He had a great career. Obviously, everyone rooted for Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, all those guys. I mean, there wasn't a bad favorite player when you were growing up being a Yankees fan.
And finally, a bonus question for you. We know the Rays are in New York this weekend taking on the Yankees. You got any plans to go home?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go home, see the family, see some friends. It'll be my first time playing there in my career, so I'm extremely excited for that.
That's great. Well, we can't wait to watch you, Richard Palacios. Thanks so much for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball. And keep killing it out there, man. We've enjoyed it.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And we'll go to our first break, but when we come back, we'll hear from Rays assistant pitching coach, rehab coach, and special assistant Rick Knapp. Plus, we'll check in with former Devil Ray Doug Wechter and the Rays director of promotions, Stefan Thomas. That's all coming up next on the Rays Baseball Network.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Work.
We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball. We're joined now by Rick Knapp, the Rays assistant pitching and rehab. And special assistant guy, coach, I guess I should say, also assistant pitching coach and rehab coach and special assistant. But, Rick, thanks so much for joining us. We do appreciate it.
You bet, Chris. You bet.
So, obviously, this year is probably a little bit busier for you than normal with all the guys who are on the injured list and guys who are rehabbing.
Yeah, I would say that there's a point to be made that we could have the best starting staff in all of baseball here in the rehab, but it is a little bit busier. Fortunately, we have a great team of, people that surround me and surround these guys. So to say that, McClanahan and Raz and Springs and Boz and Taj, we got quite an assortment of guys. They're great. They're inquisitive. They always ask questions. It's unfortunate that I get a chance to work with them, but I got a chance to work with them.
And you just mentioned that rotation of guys that are on the injured list. How is everybody doing, though, those guys that you mentioned? Obviously, all five are at different stages in terms of coming back.
Yeah, I'm really encouraged in all aspects. Obviously, McClanahan's he's too far out to say that he's ahead or behind. He's right on schedule for the early portion of the program that he's at. The closest to return, probably Taj. He threw Wednesday pretty good. Happy where he's at. We'll throw another sim game or extended spring game Monday, and then he'll be ready to join Durham. And right behind him will be Boz. He'll be the week after him. And then maybe 2 to 3 weeks after that, Springs will be ready to go out. And then maybe 2 to 3 weeks after that, Raz will be ready to go out. So everybody is progressing normally, if not better than what I had hoped to be at this particular point. But everybody looks good.
Obviously, some of those guys have different injuries. But I think 4 out of the 5, though, are coming back from Tommy John surgery. I'm curious, does everyone follow the same program when it comes to rehabbing from Tommy John surgery? Is that the same protocol for every player, or is each individual different?
Well, just like the game itself, every pitcher in the game has their own unique delivery and style. And to say the program in its general form is identical, we've had a really good success rate here the last 2-3 years of bringing guys back from it. Trying to remain consistent with it. The guys that really have the most trouble with it are the ones that want to try to jump ahead and are anxious to get throwing instead of just following the program. We have several steps and things in place that we try to do to kind of prepare guys for when they get to the mound, that being some dry work and drills and stuff that kind of prepare them for their first mound blend, and then their mound work that leads into the batting practices that lead into the simulated games and then actual games. So the process is long, but we try to keep it as close to like their throwing abilities and knowing that they are individual. And hey, look, they are the drivers of the program. If there's a place where they don't feel great, then we can take a step back. That doesn't necessarily mean they're regressed, but it means that, hey, their body's telling them that we have to maybe back off a little bit, and that's normal. We haven't had that with any of these cases thus far. And Taj is a little bit different because he had a pec strain, and Boz had finished the Tommy John stuff last year, and then he suffered an oblique. So we're trying to deal with these issues. But quite honestly, Boz is about right on time for where we thought he'd be starting the season, knowing that he has an innings limit.
What kinds of things are you working on with all 5 of those pitchers?
Well, some of them are, first off, Chris, it depends on the student that you have, just like in anything, right? Education is the same way. The student will open up enough to let you in. Hey, look, you got hurt for a reason. Do you want to try to fix the reason? Some guys are a little bit closed mindset oriented because they know they got to the big leagues a particular way and they just want to return to that form. Other guys are really receptive as to, hey man, I got hurt for a reason, how can I remedy this? And then there's others that are like, hey man, I'm going to take this time to fix my body. I'm going to get stronger, I'm going to be more athletic, I'm going to get more agile, and maybe you can help me clean up my lower half and figure out what I'm doing there. So each individual will kind of lead me to a series. Now, some of it is using the mound. We'll use the mound because that's where our work is done, and we can do some of these drills and stuff on the mound, which gives them a sense of I'm getting closer. Mm-hmm. But there's a set of not one particular thing that we do. I will say that there are two products, constraint-oriented drill. The one is the strap that we use to kind of, and the Corvilo belt. These two tools help these guys really integrate their lower half. Maybe that was a reason. And the other is this pitch logic ball that's from F5 Sports that basically is TrackMan and a ball that we can use when they're playing long toss and on flat ground to make sure that their pitching metrics are mirroring what they will be when they get to the mound.
You've been in the game a long time, Rick, so you're probably a good guy to ask this question. What do you make of the litany of elbow injuries in the game today and the amount of Tommy John surgeries that pitchers undergo? Obviously,
we're kind of in uncharted territory because it seems like just about everybody has had at least one Tommy John surgery in their career already.
Hey, listen, man, there's a lot to be talked about here. Everybody talks about it in April, May, because that's when everybody gets hurt. We know that. We've known that for years. But then come July and August, nobody remembers about those guys that are hurt, other than next spring training when they're talking about, hey, this guy should be ready out of rehab. So there's always going to be a lot of talk about injuries when they happen, and they happen in the early part of the season due to who knows what. To say it's the pitch clock is ridiculous. In my point, I mean, not to say that it is a contributing factor, but to put all the blame on that is kind of stupid. On the flip side of that, how conservative do you want to be? I mean, hey, look, in the NFL, they've done some things with you can't hit the quarterback there, and you can't hit above the neck, and now you can't tackle a particular way. You know, how serious are you? How serious are you about making the change to protect pitchers? I mean, you want to? Are you to the point where you want to say, hey, if you throw a pitch over 100 miles an hour, that's an illegal pitch, right? That would be an extreme. But at some point, you know, there's people will throw harder. There's no ceiling on that. There doesn't seem to be. Every year there'll be another guy that's going to eclipse 106 or 107. Heck, man, by the time I'm ready to get out the game, there may be guys throwing 120. Who knows? And as long as that is the case, there's going to be guys injured.
Right, but pitchers are incentivized now to throw harder, wouldn't you say?
There isn't a better metric to tell you that you can get guys out than velocity. I mean, there's a bunch of other things that you can get hitters out with, but velocity is that main driver. And at the end of the day, hey man, if you're in a market, and I'm not blaming our market, but if you're in a market where you're basically churning roster a lot, and hey, the more guys that we can get to throw 100, then the better we're going to be able to compete. And the pitchability piece, which is almost a lost art now, because if velocity's the driver and pitch metrics are the driver, teaching somebody how to pitch, it just takes too long. And by the time that fella becomes really good at pitching, we can't afford him. It's a different avenue, you know.
So is it fair to say, in your opinion, the litany of elbow injuries is due to the fact that guys are just throwing way harder in the max effort stuff?
I wouldn't just put it at max effort. I would say that it's max effort over time. And not just fastball, but it's breaking ball. Breaking balls are harder than they've ever been too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just to say, you know, if you add velocity with your fastball, you're adding velocity with everything. And at the end of it, pitching used to be a push and pull thing, and velocity was something that was, you know, capped at, man, you know, if you saw a guy throw 95, it was something. Yeah. Now, if you see a guy throw 101, you're like, oh, okay, well, it's 101. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like a common occurrence. Everybody has a guy on their team that seems to be able to hit that. Some of that is just the nature of humans. We're getting bigger and stronger and faster and all that. But also at the same time, it's, you know, it's frustrating. It's job security for me. I mean, as long as there's going to be pitchers, there's going to be pitchers hurt. And I don't think that there's anyone to blame. I think that if you gave every pitcher I say, hey, look, if you could throw this, you'll be in the big leagues. I think every single pitcher would say, I'll do it. And even if you said you're going to be hurt, they would say, I'm going to do it. So as long as there's that desire to want to be a major league pitcher, there's going to be velocity is going to be chased no matter what.
I asked Kyle Snyder this question during spring training, and I'll ask you the same. You were the pitching coach for the Detroit Tigers for a couple of years. Just how much has the game changed since even then, which was, 10, 15 years ago? Because it feels like the changes have been significant.
Yeah, well, I mean, everything, it's different. It's not the same game. I'm epiphanized every freaking day when I see what's happening in the game. The stuff that I used to look at, I feel stupid. You know, that, man, why would I even think that was a thing? You know, the game's, and it's, hey, man, 2 or 3 years from now, we're going to be saying the same thing. There's changes that are yet to be made that we're looking at. Yeah. And quite honestly, Chris, for me, and I've used this line maybe 100 times, the changes excite me. They keep the blood going, man. I mean, trying not to be a dinosaur in the game, and you know, man, I'm driven by the changes, and I'm excited and want to learn, and I want to be a better coach for the players. And man, just because there's, you know, snow on the roof don't mean there's not a fire in the furnace, buddy. You know?
I like that.
Well, let's talk about your playing career for a little bit and in your coaching career, how you got into it. So you were a 41st round draft choice by the Texas Rangers in 1983 out of Virginia Tech. Yes. Shout out Eric Neander. What was it like pitching for the Rangers in their organization? I mean, you were there for, I think, 5 years.
Listen, man, my career was I can tell you this, and I was I pitched in Oklahoma City and
Triple A
at the time, and I was so good that they asked me to coach. So I think that I mean, at that time there was a lot of different things, and looking back, I could have seen myself maybe having an opportunity to pitch in the major leagues, but I knew that my ability and talent level wasn't what it was going to take to be a major leaguer long term. Coaching had always appealed to me, and I kind of took that next step naturally. Mm-hmm. I can also tell you that the first year that I ended up coaching, I hated it. I thought I made the worst decision of my life. And then I got an opportunity to be a rookie league pitching coach and start on the ground floor, and most guys probably would say that, man, what a crappy job, but I mean, it really allowed me to lay a foundation. I was honestly with the Rangers for 13 years, 5 as a player and then 8 as a coach. And, you know, just like in baseball, 13 years is a long time. I mean, baseball years are like dog lives, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was with them for 13 years as a player and a coach, and got let go with a regime change. And then I got to the Twins, and then I was with the Twins for 13 years, and it was unbelievable. I mean, the first year I was in the rookie league, and then they asked me to become the pitching coordinator and basically to set up. I mean, back then there was one pitching coordinator, and it was my job to basically cover everything that encompassed pitching, and you know, off-season conditioning program. I mean, everything. I mean, I wasn't qualified. I mean, I'm not qualified to be a strength and conditioning person, but yet I was tasked with putting a program together, and it really helped me become a more complete pitching coach. And then when I got to the big leagues with the Tigers, it kind of came out of the blue. I had resigned myself that I was going to be a minor league guy in my entire career, and I had 26 years in the minor leagues, and I was just like, man, okay, this is it. And I was good with that. I really enjoyed what I was doing. And then out of the blue, the Tigers called. Jim Leland interviewed me, and I didn't think that I was going to get the job. I took a ball with me when I did the interview to have him sign the dang thing, because I just really didn't think that I was going to get the job, and I knew that he was going to be a Hall of Fame manager. And then he called me and offered me the job. So I was in complete shock and surprise. And quite honestly, the task at that time was you got to fix Verlander. Okay. So my career is kind of twisted and turning. I've been around the world. I worked as in the big leagues with the Tigers for 2.5 years. I worked as a coordinator for the Royals for a year. I was with the Dodgers as a coordinator for 4 years. I worked for MLB and went around the world for a year, and now this is my eighth year with the Rays, and third year in the big leagues with Kevin, and working under Kyle. I feel like I'm the second best pitching coach in the world, right? So.
And we have to know that Justin Verlander, shortly after you worked with him, he did win an MVP.
Yes, yeah. MVP, Cy Young, and yeah, all that, and Scherzer wasn't far behind that, right. And Porcello wasn't far behind that, so to think that, hey, maybe there's a song out there. There's a song by the Grateful Dead called Ripple. Maybe I had a little bit of something to do with that.
I think you did. Well, we appreciate your time today, Rick Knapp, and best of luck the rest of the season. Thanks so much for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball.
You bet, man. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
We really appreciate Rays assistant pitching coach, rehab coach, and special assistant Rick Knapp for his insightful takes on modern-day pitching. Coming up, our conversation with Rays broadcaster Doug Wechter. Stay with us. We're coming right back on the Rays Baseball Network.
And we continue on this week in Rays baseball, and I'm joined now by Rays broadcaster Doug Wechter for the first time this season. Doug, how are you? Thanks for being on.
No, I'm excited about it, man. I'm doing well, doing really well. Having fun watching our boys take on the Yankees right now.
I was going to say, yeah, the Rays are doing pretty well, too. A nice 2-0 win in 10 innings over the New York Yankees. I'm curious, though, we're 22 games in. The Rays are 12-10. I know how I feel about it. I think all things considered, they have to be pleased with where they're at. But what about you?
Yeah, you know, you can look at it definitely with a glass half full, right? You can say, all right, well, the first part of the season, they're definitely not at full strength. We know specifically the left-handed bats are going through some injuries right now, and we're missing some key guys. And without those key guys, you're still playing above 500 baseball. You're going out there. I think the Yankee series, you know, these first two games have been important just to kind of measure up where this team is, because, you know, they haven't played the hardest competition up to date. They played a couple hard series to start, but then you go to Colorado and then the Angels. Angels are better this year, but still, you know, it's not the Yankees, right? And it's not some of these other powerful teams. And so being able to go out to New York when New York is playing well and, you know, at least up to this point, you know, go 1-1 and have a chance to take the series. I think it's a good thing. I'm with you. I'm looking at it as a glass half full. I think there's room for improvement, definitely. And I think we're going to see that improvement mainly in the bullpen. I think the bullpen's been kind of the biggest surprise for everybody, knowing how good and talented this group can be, to be a little bit hit or miss early in the season has been a little bit of a surprise. But I think this group, again, it's so talented. They're going to get on track, and they're still going to be, down the road, one of the strengths of this team.
Well, it feels like the bullpen has gotten back on track in recent games. You look back to yesterday, Zach Eflin goes 6 scoreless innings, then Colin Poche comes on, scoreless 7th, Phil Maton, a scoreless 8th. He's looked really good his last handful of times out. Jason Adam has been almost lights out all season long. He gets the scoreless 9th, getting Juan Soto. And he struck out Aaron Judge also in a 1-2-3 inning. And then Garrett Clevenger comes on in the 10th for his first ever major league save. That was encouraging to see. I think the bullpen is starting to come around. But, of course, I don't think we can not talk about Pete Fairbanks, right? I mean, he got sick on Friday. He stayed at the hotel. That's what we know. And then Saturday, I think he had a bit of a dead arm. And it just wasn't feeling up for it. But obviously he has struggled so far this season. Doug, what have you made of Pete Fairbanks in 2024 thus far?
Well, yeah, and first, before I answer about Pete, I do agree with you. I think that these guys have turned the corner, right? And it's been very encouraging. You know, Maton they brought in, and he's a guy that they really liked in the offseason. Big free agent acquisition for the Rays, and I think he's starting to to shape up to be the guy that they've wanted. It was awesome to see Clevenger go out there, get his first save. You go into a tough situation like that, and he's able to lock it down. So really encouraged by the bullpen here recently. With Pete Fairbanks specifically, he's going through a rough stretch. I mean, there's no way to get around it. You pitch long enough in the big leagues, everybody goes through it. And this is, unfortunately, Pete's time to go through it. You can see the frustration on his face after outings that he's not coming through, and he's so used to going out there and sealing the deal, locking the door, and getting the, you know, the final out of the game and doing it in a really, really impressive fashion. And that's not what we're seeing from Pete here recently. I think mechanically he's had some issues that have led to maybe a little bit of a confidence thing where his confidence is not the same as we've seen him in the past. And, you know, the only way to get over that is, first of all, work with your pitching coach, right? Kyle Snyder, who's the best in the game, but also just keep taking the ball, right? You got to keep taking the ball. You got to keep going out there and just work through it. Now, the hardest part about Major League Baseball and as a pitcher is that all of your faults, everything that happens in a negative light or a positive light, it's all in front of everybody. It plays out in front of everyone. And when you're the closer, you know, you're in the hardest part of the game, the most difficult situation of the game as a relief pitcher. And typically it's a tight game. And so there's not a lot of room for error. And so he's in a very tough spot to be working through some things. The hope is that when he takes the ball next, he can go out there, have a very clean inning and build off of that. Because that's what you do. You just take it one step at a time. And that's what we're hoping for from Pete. I mean, his stuff is still there. right? His stuff is still mid to upper 90s, hammer of a slider. And this is a guy who brings it at 6'6". He's a tower on the mound. We just got to get him in the zone. Got to get him attacking hitters a little bit more. And if that's the case, then he'll right the ship. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that's a long answer to say he is frustrated and he's not the same guy that we've seen in the past. And hopefully he'll get back on track soon.
Yeah, because we know how talented he is, and we know that once he does get on track, it's going to be game over once we get to the ninth inning. I did mention Zach Eflin, though. He's now on a stretch where he's gone 12 2/3 scoreless innings this week, first against the Angels and then against the Yankees. So a combination of those two. Today, Aaron Civale goes. He has been almost lights out. The only thing that's really beaten him is the long ball. Zach Littell, maybe a little too many walks than what we expected, more walks than we expected, but he's looked good. Ryan Pepiot appears to be turning the corner. And how about Tyler Alexander opening up this start, or the series rather, against the Yankees on Friday, 5 1/3 innings. I look at that rotation, Doug, and I know it's not all the healthy guys because we do have a bunch of injured starters, but this starting rotation is starting to look pretty good, I think.
Yep, I agree. We're talking about the bullpen shaping up into form. I think the rotation is also doing the same. I think Savali's been solid the entire year, right? You know, what I've seen from Littell, I really like Littell. I love the way he attack hitters. You're right. You have probably a few more walks than he's used to, but still, this guy has some of the best command in the big leagues. So I love the way he goes about his business, his tempo, all the above. Ryan Pepiot, my goodness, man, I'm so happy. Every time that guy takes the mound, it's fun for me to watch because I think he's going to be a rising star in this league with his stuff, with everything, his demeanor on the mound, everything he brings to the table. I'm a big fan of Ryan Pepiot. And then, you know, Tyler Alexander, that was awesome to see, man. Way to go out there, set the tone against a very difficult lineup. And then Zach Eflin. Look, Zach, you know, he's going to be the anchor of this rotation, right? And you could say the first few starts haven't been as consistent as we would have thought, you know. That being said, it was only a bad inning in his first start, right? And he hasn't been totally off. It's just we're so used to seeing Eflin go out there and look like he did yesterday, right? Look like he did against the Yankees. And I think that's what we're going to get from Zach, you know, moving forward, is this guy is so good. And he has such good command of really, really strong stuff. He's a top of the rotation guy. And, you know, the 16 wins last year, the career season he had last year, I think he's going to build off of that. And just as long as he stays healthy, we're going to get a number one in our rotation. And he's going to set the tone for the rest of this rotation. And it's good to have him there, both on and off the field, because on the field, we saw what he could do, you know, over the last year and really just over his last start. But off the field, he's also a mentor to these guys. He's one of the older guys in that rotation that other guys can look at and ask and learn from. And so he's so important in so many different ways. But yes, I do like where our rotation is at right now. And also the fact that we're going to have some arms coming. We're in a good spot.
And finally, Doug, let's take it to the offensive side of things. There almost too many players to talk about. Richie Palacios has gotten off to a red-hot start. Jose Caballero with the big hit yesterday. He's playing terrific defense at shortstop, obviously. Ahmed Rosario's on a 12-game hitting streak. What a signing that was for the Rays. But I kind of want to focus on what's going on with Randy Arozarena right now. We know that he and Yandy Diaz both got off to horrible starts. Yandy hit a home run in the first at-bat of the season, but after that kind of dipped. He appears to be turning the corner a little bit, though. His average is way up. He's had some multi-hit games this week. But Randy Arozarena, I think, looks somewhat lost at the moment. Do you think he'll be able to turn it around at some point soon?
Yeah. I mean, look, you're right with the amount of guys that we can talk about in this lineup. Because, first of all, how about all the new faces? You mentioned all the new faces. Those guys are making such a big impact with some great signings. Again, for the Tampa Bay Rays, just like always, they find these guys, they insert them, and all of a sudden they're making huge impacts. So great there with all the new faces. With Randy Arozarena, to me, it looks like he's pressing. And, you know, he's so used to playing at an elite level that he got off to a rough start. And, you know, I think this happens with some guys, is that they expect so much out of themselves, is that they start pressing very quickly in the season because their numbers aren't where they're used to seeing. And when a player is pressing, you can see it in the way he's taking pitches. You can see it in you know, the lack of deep counts. He'll go out there. I think he swings very early in the count compared to last year. Last year, remember, he walked, I think it was 80 times. And the year prior, he only walked around 42, 43 times. So he almost doubled his walk rate last year. I'm not seeing that kind of patience at the plate right now from Randy. And that's what happens when you get when you start pressing. You know, you go out there, you just start swinging at everything. You don't really trust yourself as much as you do when you're confident. That's where we need to get him. We need to get his confidence back a little bit. We also need to get, you know, just watching him at times. I think his swing is a little bit longer than I've seen in the past. I think he's casting a little bit. He's not as quick to the ball. He's not as short to the ball. And when Randy's swing gets a little bit longer, he gets exposed a little bit, which everybody does, you know. It's just a mechanical thing that I think that he can address. And, you know, if he's able to address that and build a little confidence off of a couple good games, then we're going to see the same Randy that we've seen in the last 3 years. What is it, 3 years, 2020 guy? This guy's explosive when he's right. And I know Kevin Cash, Chad Matola, all the guys in the dugout, that is one of their biggest concerns. And not really concerns, that's their biggest thing that they want to address is how to get Randy right. Because this lineup is so different when you have a healthy, good Yandy Diaz at the top and a Randy Rosarena who's crushing right behind him or somewhere in that lineup. And looks like Yandy's turning the corner, like you said, but Randy really hasn't seen that game, that breakout game yet, and hopefully it'll come soon.
Well, I hope you're going to let me know if I'm ever pressing Doug Wechter. So thanks so much for joining us for a few minutes on This Week in Rays Baseball. We appreciate it.
Dude, you're never pressing. You're always a solid presence in that booth. I love hearing you, man. You're doing a great job. Thanks for having me on.
Likewise, buddy. Thanks again.
And we really appreciate Doug Wechter for carving out some time for us on this Sunday afternoon. Coming up, Rays Director of Promotions, Stephan Thomas. Stay with us. We're coming right back on the Rays Baseball Network. And we continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and I'm joined now by the Director of Promotions for the Tampa Bay Rays. It's Mr. Stephan Thomas. Stephan, thanks so much for joining us.
Appreciate you having me. Great to be here.
So let's talk about the promotions for the 2024 season. We'll start with the Dave Wills Hawaiian shirt giveaway. I thought that was one of the most comfortable pieces of clothing that I've ever worn. How did that come to be, and how did you guys nail it so well?
Well, really, it ties into Dave. You know, we wanted something that was authentic to him and to his personality, and when we found out that he was getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, my first thought instantly, got to do a tropical shirt. Dave always wore them, always loved it. And really, like, my favorite part of it is that we were able to do the Dave microphone on the little pocket sleeve there, right there. It was such a nice little touch in the colors, and being in the ballpark that day and seeing all the fans wearing it and his family loved it, just something that was really special.
It was great. I'm a huge fan of that Dave patch myself. I have it on my backpack, as a number of people do here with the Rays. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the upcoming promotions, though? We know that the Randy Rosarena luchador mask is probably going to be a massive hit.
Yeah, Randy, Cinco de Mayo, a really fun day. We have the Mets in town. The first 5,000 fans, 14 and under, receive the Randy Rosarena luchador mask. And then we hit them right back the next weekend. Another kids giveaway, our friendship bracelet kid against the Yankees. Always our friends that we like to say from up north. And then, we're doing this right around the time of a new Taylor Swift album. So really tying into the cultural phenom of Taylor and the friendship bracelet kit. So a really cool, unique item for fans of all ages, you know, 14 and under to get.
Yeah, how do you come up with this stuff? My guess is it's not just you. I'm sure that you have a bunch of people, and you go in a conference room or something, you throw ideas out there, but is that pretty much how it's done?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a process. You always want to be aware of not just what other teams across MLB are doing, but other cultural trends. And then, you know, we get in a room, but really we don't do it just at one time of the year. It's something that we're constantly always thinking about. So we have our idea deck already started for next year. We're just constantly thinking of new ideas and really just trying to come up and be unique and be different and be fun and be rayful. That's really our entire goal in being all the giveaways.
Is there any giveaway or promotion that you're particularly proud of over your time with the Rays?
You know, I always say the DJ Kitty onesie is one that always stands out as being, you know, really special and really unique, and seeing the fan reaction to that. But I'm really excited about the Flappy Boy zip-up hoodie that we have on August 9th this year. Two sizes. Even the images, I would say, don't do it justice, because we see it and it's so soft and it's so comfy. And it's just something that I'm really excited about for later this year. And I really hope everybody gets a ticket and gets to enjoy that one.
And we had Jackie Robinson Day just 6 days ago.
And obviously a seismic day in not just sports history, but world history. I'm curious, what does that day mean to you personally?
You know, it's just a day of reflection, and honestly, paving the way for people like myself, for people, you know, other nationalities and color, and an intro into baseball and being the first one to, you know, break down that barrier. And it's something that I took both of my daughters out of the game, just to want to be in the ballpark and experience Jackie Robinson Day and be able to have that conversation with them about who Jackie Robinson is and, you know, what he meant to the game of baseball.
Now, that's one of several culture and identity nights that we have at Tropicana Field this year. We also had Greek Heritage Night, which coincided with Autism Awareness Day at the ballpark. But we have so many coming up. I mean, it's kind of overwhelming, but in the best possible ways.
Yeah, and it's something that we really want to connect with people and, you know, and have something that's special to them and also special to our brand and special to what we want to do at the ballpark. And, you know, my favorite thing about the Greek Night and all of the Heritage Nights that we're going to be doing this year is that we're really trying to just build on it and not just have it be, hey, we got this really cool, unique Greek hat, but we're doing, you know, pregame food and drink specials in lower ballpark and rec. So you come out and you experience, and there's, you know, DJs and like local bands, and there's the core, and really just a festive environment for all the fans, you know, of the different heritages to come in and connect and be a part of the experience with the Rays.
I ask almost everybody this question that I've interviewed on this show, but what is it about the Tampa Bay Rays that is so special to you? Like, this is obviously an incredibly unique place to work for myriad reasons, but for Stephan Thomas, what are they?
You know, for me, it's about the way that the organization itself treats people, and it's a place where we're pushed to have fun and we're pushed to, you know, break walls but not windows is one of the Stu's favorite phrases. We're here to have fun. Like, my job personally is to help people create experiences and have memories with their family and friends. So you tell me that, and that's a fun day, you know. Uh-huh. So just being able to help people create experiences and have fun, and we're here. It's baseball. It's fun. It's like the only thing I've ever wanted to do was work in sports, and baseball has been my favorite sport since I was a little kid. So to be here, just try to not take it for granted and really enjoy it.
And when I walked in here, I saw your Washington State Cup, which my mom, Janet Adams, also a fellow Cougar. How did you end up with the Rays, though, all the way from Pullman, Washington?
It's a cool little funny story. Is one of my classmates, he did an internship with the Red Devil Rays at the time, 2006, and he was the first one that came from Pullman to Washington State. So he came in, he did a good job, and then my twin brother, who also works for the team, he came in next, and then I came in after him. So really it's just a collection of, you know, that was the first intro conversation, and, you know, we wanted to chase a dream. So the best opportunity to get into Major League Baseball was with the Devil Rays at that time, and we just took a shot at it, and, you know, 15, 16 years later, still here and still loving the experience.
And did you work in sports at all while you were at Wazoo?
Yeah, started in, did minor league baseball as well during the summer with the Boise Hawks, worked in the athletic department at Washington State all my years in marketing and in sports information, so it was always a goal to work in sports. I've just been fortunate enough to have it happen.
Yeah, well, we can't thank you enough for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball, Stephan. I'm sure we'll be checking in with you as the season goes on for all these cool and amazing promotions that we have, but thanks again. We do appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And that is going to do it for us.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
3-2 with two on. Swing and a miss. He got him with a slider. Colin Poche gets the big K. And the Rays hold on with a 5-4 lead here in the eighth.
If you missed any of the show, catch it at RaysBaseball.com/radio.